You are now listening to The Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black Culture Amplified.
Hi, and welcome to The Blackest Questions. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Greer, politics editor for The Griot and associate professor of political science at Fordham University. In this podcast, we ask our guests five of the blackest questions so we can learn a little bit more about them and have some fun while we're doing it. We're also going to learn a lot about Black history, past and present. So here's how this works. We have five rounds of questions about us, Black history, the entire diaspora, current events, you name it. And with each round, the questions get a little tougher, and the guest has 10 seconds to get it right. If they answer the question correctly, they'll receive one symbolic Black fist, and they'll hear this. And if they get it wrong, they'll hear this. But we still love them anyway.
Our guest for this episode is Tony Award nominee, actress, and singer L. Morgan Lee, who is part of Michael R. Jackson's Pulitzer Prize-winning musical, A Strange Loop, that just wrapped up its Broadway run last month. The musical received 11 Tony nominations, the most for any show in 2022, and L. Morgan received a Tony nomination for Best Featured Actress in a Musical, and she was recognized as a trailblazer in the Broadway community, and she's been honored for her work and commitment to inclusion. L. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us here at The Blackest Questions. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready. Thank you for having me, Dr. Christina.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I saw Strange Loop and you were fabulous. So
thank
we'll get
you.
Into that a little bit later in the episode. Okay. Question number one. In January of this year, this person became the first Black governor of Maryland and is only the third Black person to be governor of any state in the United States. Who is he?
It's so embarrassing because I'm from Maryland. I should know the answer to this. I have no idea.
Okay, so he's the third Black man to be elected governor. We've had other governors who had to step in who were appointed. And the answer is Wes Moore.
Wes Moore.
So he's a Democrat and military veteran who won Maryland's governor's race by a landslide. He's only 44 years old and new to politics. He's never held any other office. He was a Rhodes Scholar, a best-selling author, a Wall Street investment banker, and the founder of an anti-poverty nonprofit. And in the United States, we've only had two other elected Black governors before Wes Moore, L. Douglas Wilder, who served one term as Virginia's governor back in 1990, and the other was Deval Patrick, who led Massachusetts in 2007, serving two terms. So you are from Maryland.
From Maryland.
When you're not on Broadway and singing and acting, do you follow politics at all?
No, I don't. I'm someone who keeps up with basic things kind of here and there. It's awful. I've become a bit of a social media follower of politics. So the things that hit the big headlines, I catch. But just because my mind is always sort of going in a bit of a blur, I feel like it all just sort of jumbles in together in piles. So I probably just need more breath in general so that I can retain more of this information.
Absolutely, because there's so much. You know, as someone who's been studying politics for so long, I need a breather, right? I need a break sometime. Now, what part of Maryland are you from?
I'm from the, Bowie Greenbelt area of Maryland, so PG County. But I've been in New York, not significant, but a bit longer than I had been in Maryland at this point. So at this point, I'm probably from New York, but I originated in Maryland.
Isn't it that beautiful crossover where, you know, for New Yorkers, it's like, well, I've been here, but, you know, the old school New Yorkers are like, well, what high school did you go to? And then it's like, okay, well, technically I'm a transplant, but here we are. Uh-huh. And so when you were growing up in Maryland, though, were you involved in musical theater and, you know, sort of that community when you're growing up? Or when did you get bitten by this singing and acting bug?
Well, I've been singing since I was in my high chair. So I was always singing. I did a lot of show choir stuff in high school. And I went to Duke Ellington for 2 years, which is in Georgetown, in D.C. And so that sort of really started the bug full on because we got to travel a bit. And it's interesting. I was saying to someone the other day, there's so many shows happening at the Kennedy Center. And it's such a revered, honored, space to play in. In particular, people now are talking about it so much. I took it so much for granted because our show choir, we were there all the time.
Right. You're like, so whatever, the Kennedy Center.
It was like, whatever, the Kennedy Center. But so now I'm I wish I had taken more of what that was, because I'd love to be at the Kennedy Center now. And like, I right. know those hallways, but like, it's, yeah, it's interesting, like what we take for granted when we don't realize where we actually are, how important the spaces we are.
Well, you know, as they say, like youth is wasted on the young, you know, like you're just Absolutely. Hanging out at the Kennedy Center, not realizing it's the Kennedy Center.
This is the Kennedy Center. Well, right.
It's the Kennedy Center. Now, as someone who lip syncs in church, right? I mean, El Morgan, when I tell you I have the worst voice ever, what advice do you give people who, you know, might be in high school, who look at you? I mean, you've become an icon and a trailblazer and such an inspiration to so many people who want to be on Broadway, who want to be off Broadway. You know, your voice is incredible. What advice do you give to, you know, say that high school student who's kind of in the musical choir or, you know, dipping their toe into theater, to sort of take this seriously and go down some of the paths that you've gone? What would you tell them?
Keep studying. Study, study, study. Not even necessarily like, yes, with teachers, but also on your own. I spent a lot of time just in practice rooms alone singing just because I love doing it. And I feel like we have to... the minute money gets involved in it and it becomes a career, you have to really like be able to sort of draw yourself back to like the reason why you do this, because capitalism and all this stuff will really sort of take the joy out of it if you're not careful. So if you want to pursue it on a bigger platform, I think really spend the time like cultivating the craft itself so that you have something to hold on to in the moments when you feel tired. Because that's the utmost importance, especially at this point. Like, I just finished doing the almost year run of a show where the show becomes your job. It becomes work. And you have to often tap back into, okay, wait, why am I doing this? Who is this for? And a lot of that for me ends up being tapping into that, like, kid in a practice room just sitting at the piano, or, like, my mom catching me outside of my bedroom playing on my keyboard, singing things and doing monologues. That's the stuff that helps you through.
Okay, I'm here with El Morgan Lee. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more of the Blackest Question. Okay, we're back. I'm with El Morgan Lee, who just finished her run on A Strange Loop. Welcome back to the Blackest Question. Are you ready for question number two?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. We got this. We're together.
I'm like it's just American history. You like mentioned that they get a little harder as we go, and I'm like,
I'm right here with you, right? You know, listen. I lip sing in church, so I look to you. You are my Sherpa on this journey. Okay. Question number two. This moment in history took place in June of 1969 when police arrested mostly Black and Brown women at a gay bar in Greenwich Village, a neighborhood in New York City. This moment is credited with catapulting the LGBTQ movement for civil rights. What am I describing?
Stonewall?
Yes, the Stonewall riots. So when police raided the Stonewall Inn, a popular gay bar, patrons fought back. It's believed a Black drag performer named Storm DeLarvery threw the first punch because the authorities started to get violent while loading people into their patrol cars. The raid led to 6 straight days of protests, largely led by Black gay rights activists. And on the one-year anniversary of the riots, June 28, 1970, thousands of people marched from Manhattan to Central Park, which was the first official gay pride parade in the United States. So, much like race relations in this country, gay rights are far from being calcified and solidified in our pantheon. Where do you think we are with our current climate for LGBTQ plus rights?
Oof.
I know. I feel like we've come with, you know, that like, old Benson and Hedges. Was it Benson and Hedges or a Virginia Slims commercial? Like, we've come a long way, baby, but we still got a long way to go.
Yeah. I think that we certainly have come a long way. But again, yeah, we have only really reached the surface of the changes that need to happen. In particular with right now, in particular, there are so many, there's like hundreds of different things in legislatures like trying to be passed. To prohibit trans folks from even basically existing at this point, which it's laughable because it's like you can put all of the laws and things you want into place, but people will not stop existing. And so it's just going to be a constant back and forth. And quite frankly, people will do the things they need to do. And so if we don't find ways to allow them to happen in a safe and sort of nurtured way, it could then turn into a much more dangerous situation for so many people. We don't want to see any more uptick in harm being done to trans youth, or, you know, suicides and such. I mean, that took a sort of dark turn all of a sudden. But we don't want to see the numbers go up for people who are young people in particular, who are harming themselves or who are doing things to themselves because they don't feel like they have access to the things that they need.
Absolutely.
So I think we have a long ways to go. And the first, I feel like one of the biggest things that will help us in doing that is if we can learn to listen to one another. I think a lot of these conversations are happening without the people who are being, whose lives are being impacted by them, being in the room for the conversations. Mm-hmm. I would not dare, you know, want to be on a panel or board making decisions about subjects that I don't understand or know. If I'm living something every day, I'm the person you want to be in the room because I can actually give you a little bit more insight on what these things actually mean. And you don't want one trans person. You need plenty of trans people because people's lives and needs are so different, just like any other group.
Just like any other group. Absolutely. You know, and especially with the intersection of Black trans men and women in our community, I think that needs to also be a conversation in the forefront. You know, I say this all the time. When we think about, say, like housing, you know, you'll have all these panels. And it's like, is anyone on this panel housing insecure? Right? We'll have panels on, like, you know, youth development. It's like, but no young people are on the panel. You know, so it goes on and on about, you know, drug usage. It's like, well, we don't have any former people who were addicted to substances that, you know, were once legal or are now legal or whatever the conversation may be. And I think it's so important to really highlight the, as you said, the diversity of the trans community in many of these spaces. And it's not just one specific, one selected voice.
Right.
You know, you sort of, you know, I'm still thinking about the, you know, you coming into developing your role and your voice, literally your voice as a singer and an actress. Do you remember some of those songs that you sang that kind of gave you either courage or motivation as you were on this road? You know, knowing that, you know, as we, you know, talked before we started recording, I mean, you know, you're a Black woman on Broadway, which is still, that's, you know, that's almost a rarity, sadly, but true. You know, we still don't have representation, just Black women being on the stage and such a prominent stage that you were on during Strange Loop. What do you remember some of the songs that you tapped into that gave you strength to kind of keep going?
I am so, sometimes I think I was born in the wrong era. I say that, but like with the like caveat that like I was born in the wrong era, but I would not want to live in those eras because we've certainly come a way since those times. But like, I mean, I grew up on watching like the old like, MGM movies and like, you know, old Diane Carroll clips and Lena Horne and Judy Garland, and like so the music that tends to speak to me tends to be like old Harold Arlen tunes, and like, you know, it's the you know, You'll Never Know's, Rosemary Clooney. It's like these old like bluesy, jazzy, like lush old movie picture things.
When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me.
And like those are also the scenes that did that for me growing up. I loved singing growing up. I was much more of a TV an old movie person, so the dream sort of has always been to be on screen. But then people sort of people realize that you sing and immediately it becomes, oh, my God, musicals. You're a Broadway. And you're like, wait. But I want to do film. I want to do film. So it's a lot of old pictures like Mommy Dearest and like The Wiz and Judy Garland and like, the, you know, Grease 2, you know, all these old like sort of would be classics to me. Are the things that sort of raised me in so many ways. The Women of Rooster Place, I could spout like start to stop. It's like these are the things that actually shape so much of me.
Well, on this podcast, we believe in manifesting. So I'm putting it out there that Elle Morgan is going to be on TV and in films in the upcoming year too. I hope that you walk around, you know, when you said Mommy Dearest, I'm like, I just picture you walking around with like a boa and some fancy, you know, nightgown and a martini glass, like yelling at your cat or something like that.
You know, just a full getting into face character. Mask. Full face mask with a towel around the hair. Screaming and holding
wire hangers.
So when the
delivery man comes, you know, what are you doing in my home? It's like, I'm here to deliver your pizza.
That's amazing.
I love it. So, you know, and I think, you know, when I was just thinking about the Women of Brewster Place, just because the visuals were just so dramatic. As a young girl, you know, watching it on television, you know, to see all these beautiful Black women with so many different ranges of acting on the screen. You know, you just, again, just like you said with hanging out at the Kennedy Center, I don't know if I fully understood just how powerful and groundbreaking that made-for-TV movie really was, you know, as a young Black girl watching it and seeing all these beautiful, dynamic Black women playing just the whole spectrum of Black womanhood.
Yeah. And that's just so powerful. And like the statement that it makes to have this group of Black women all having to like try to take down that wall together. It's like the older I get, the more sort of comfortable in my own skin I get, the more I understand it. And like it just like my respect and love of Black women, in particular cis Black women, has grown like so greatly as a result of, for me, as a result of transition and life. And it's like it's like the world that is being met every day by Black women is out of this world, and is something that I feel like I wish there were more ways of being able to express what that is, so that people could get an idea of exactly what people are going through, exactly what it takes to simply go through your daily routine. It's like it ain't the same thing as, you know, most people I think assume it is. And this idea of the strong, you know, the strong trope that's being put on. And it's like, yeah, because we live in a world where how can we survive otherwise? And it's like, you know, we don't have the conversations that we could be having. Instead, we just sort of like to throw people into categories and labels and just dismiss the experience.
Right. And it's, you know, so much of it is not just about survival, but it's about thriving.
Thriving.
I am talking to L. Morgan Lee, and you're listening to The Blackest Questions. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I'm talking to Tony nominee L. Morgan Lee, and we're just having a total Black girl fest. L. Morgan, are you ready for question number 3?
Yes, bring it on.
We got this.
Okay,
speaking of fabulous Black women, this year, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominated a female hip-hop artist for the first time. Who is she?
Oh no. I don't know that many. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hip-hop. Oh, Jesus. I'm going to say Missy Elliott, but that's probably completely wrong.
You are correct. It's Missy Elliott. Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down. Missy Misdemeanor Elliott is a 4-time Grammy Award-winning artist from Virginia, your neighbor, who exploded onto the male-dominated hip-hop scene in the late 1990s. Her unique music videos also set her apart. She's produced and written songs for artists like Aaliyah, Beyonce, Eminem, and Lizzo. And Missy also received a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame earlier this year. Now listen, I am a Missy fan, okay? I'm now an L. Morgan fan. You know, now that we're here on this podcast, I'm totally fangirling out. But Missy has been like my ride or die since her very first album. Are you a Missy fan? Do you listen to hip hop? Or, you know, I know you listen to probably, you know, you mentioned other types of music, but do you listen to Missy in particular or hip hop in general?
I don't listen to a lot of hip hop. My like rap hip hop culture in my mind sort of is very, very old school. I told you the wrong year altogether. I mean, I'm still like, I will still jam out every once in a while to a Salt and Pepper moment. So like beginning of rap, it's where I started listening. Not a lot of hip hop, but like Missy, I have definitely noticed a bit more recently. Like I said, social media is the thing that puts some things in my face. So I've noticed that she's had this whole like sort of image renovation situation, this like revamp. And I was like, wait, that's Missy? Okay. All right.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, our listeners know that I'm stuck between 1993 and 1998. Okay.
Okay.
Like, permanently stuck. Just
love
stuck
it.
In cement.
That, love it.
I mean, I think that's like the golden age for me. There's so many amazing albums that came out during that time. But I think, you know, as someone who's such an amazing performer, you know, to see her in her videos and like the costume changes and the different personalities, she's always been an icon for me just because of her creativity. So in thinking about someone like Salt-N-Pepa, I mean, even their hair, you know, you just sort of, it's just so iconic when you think about, you know, their jackets and the sneakers and the makeup and the ear, you know, the bamboo earrings. I just lost my bamboo earrings last week, and you would have thought that, you know, the world was about to end. So as far as, you know, when you're getting into character and you're, you know, getting ready to go to the theater or, you know, get prepared, do you have a particular type of music that's like your kind of hype music that sort of gets you in the headspace of where you need to be? Or are you more of a quiet, reflective type of
person? Oh, no, I'm really, really loud. I'm such a Cancer. The funny part is that I'm actually a bit of an introvert. So
as Cancers are.
Yeah, it's like I'm a bit of an introvert. So like I get into my own little space, and like in the dressing room, for instance, I would listen to kind of the same playlist almost every day. Like I would, so people in the hallway knew that I was like getting into a like, oh, she's warming up, because it was always this like same playlist of tunes. And it's not necessarily like the what you expect it to be. Like people think like I need my like hype music, stuff that's going to get me like excited and jumping around. I'm listening to like Jasmine Sullivan singing like In Love with Another Man. I'm listening to like this old R&B, like slow jams, like completely the opposite of getting reared up. And then I'll like pop in for Strange Loop. I popped in like Six would pop in there somewhere. So like the cast recording from Six and like Bridgerton, the musical. These are my two like, you know, things that went into the mix that like helped me, you know, once I get myself comfortable enough where I can feel a bit warm, I can put on Bridgerton. If I can sing through that, then I know I'm fine for the show. But yeah, it's a very random list that has like almost nothing to do with what I'm actually doing on the stage.
I can imagine your colleagues walking past and hearing the Bridgerton soundtrack.
Oh,
like,
my
okay,
God.
Well, she's getting ready.
Here she goes. Well, then they know that like once it gets to like the right songs, they're like, okay, well, she's about to finish the warm-up. Yep. And she'll come out the dressing room and chat with us.
Now, and so beyond listening to music, and by the way, when is your birthday? Because I'm a Cancer and I can listen to the same thing. I always tell people I have like the musical listening taste of like a 4-year-old, right? I can listen to the same thing over
and over
again. Every day. You know, and it's like, and I hear something new every time. When is your birthday?
I'm July 5th.
I'm July 13th. So we can be birthday buddies.
Oh,
so
that's a good time.
Once you've listened to your music, what's your next process to get ready? Because I'm fascinated. So you know, you're doing these shows, what, 8 times a week?
8 shows a week.
And each time you bring a little more nuance and a little more subtlety and a little more, you know, pizzazz. So what's your process? Listen to your music. We've got Bridgerton out of the way. And then what happens?
For me, once I've been downing coconut water, listening to the music, doing my makeup. And for a Strange Loop, as I was starting to finish the music, my hair girl would come in and do hair and put my mic in. And at that point, I'm like almost fully ready. And then we go downstairs and we get on stage. So for me, it's like, I got to the theater like a good 2.5 hours before the show. Just because I don't like, yeah, it's like I've got to create
rushing.
A home space. I don't want to rush, so everything becomes.
I don't
want
to be, you know, fit thing
sweating
when
and
I've
like,
gotta
yeah.
be on. No, well,
so I get
clearly
there, have
we'd
a
be
meal.
Good travel buddies, El Morgan.
Yes,
because I get to the airport. It's like, oh, my flight's at noon. Okay, well, it's 9:45, and I'm here in position. I'm ready
so
to go.
So I can relax.
Check my gate.
have a drink. If I want a snack, I can listen to music.
That's all the things.
It's about setting
all
a mood.
The We have to create a home and an environment. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. I'm with Al Morgan Lee. You've been listening to The Blackest Questions. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I'm with Al Morgan Lee, Tony-nominated actress from Strange Loop, Broadway's most recent production. Al Morgan, we're doing all right. You ready to rock and roll?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, question number 4. This actress became the first openly transgender woman to play a lead actress in a Broadway show. Who is she, and what musical did she star in?
Angelica Ross played Roxy in Chicago.
You are correct. So, Angelica Ross portrayed Roxy Hart in Broadway's Chicago. Ross made her acting debut in 2005 with her role in the Italian comedy film Natalie a Miami. She's also received a Primetime Emmy for her web series Her Story, but she's most known for her role in the FX series Pose. Outside of acting, Ross is also a transgender rights advocate and a businesswoman who started her own tech company called TransTech Social Enterprises, which helps employ transgender people in the tech industry. So, Angelica Ross, who's in Chicago, did you happen to see Angelica when she was in Chicago?
I saw her first performance.
Really?
I saw the very first night she went on, yeah.
Do you know her? Were you just a fan and that's, you just went to go see it?
I know her sort of peripherally through people, but we have teams that were sort of similar. So our same press person between shows wanted to extend us an invite on that night in particular, of course, because I wanted to support her because it was a big deal. So, yeah.
It's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, her Broadway work was recognized. Let's talk a little bit more about your historic accomplishment because, you know, on the Blackest Questions, we don't believe in hiding our light under a bushel. So as the first openly transgender actress to be nominated for a Tony Award, tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us about how you felt about that and about, you know, working on A Strange Loop that's just been such a groundbreaking musical on a whole host of levels to start with just sort of Black Broadway in general.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It's the best word I can start
with. Are you still pinching
with.
Yourself?
It's interesting because I've finally got to a point where I can accept it and stop pinching myself. It took me quite some time to do that. I feel the responsibility of that now in an interesting way. This word that people use, trailblazer, is one that I now see in a very different way than I've ever seen it before. It's interesting how the universe sort of presents you with things that make you appreciate life and people more. It's like when I hear this idea of firsts now, I understand it in a slightly different way. And one of the things is that we always hear about the accomplishment that the firsts have done, but we don't then follow up to see how they're doing. So like, you know, this person sort of cracked a glass ceiling. Someone told me along the way, you don't crack a glass ceiling without being cut. And so there's a lot of wanting to make sure that I can help make sure that people behind me sort of don't have to go through some of the same things that I experienced along the way. And like this goes back to the conversation we had earlier where it's like you want people to be in the room so that you can, if we all are invested in moving forward and in making progress, then we have to have the conversations. And so you need those people who have been in the room, who are experiencing what the room looks like without that work, to be present in those conversations to help us to prepare things a bit better. I don't want to look back at you know, younger folks coming through and like not say anything and then see their feet get burned. I want to make sure that they know which shoes to wear before they get in the room.
Right. Absolutely.
And so, you know, we, Broadway in particular, but our business, our industry, our world has a lot of work to do to allow people to be. I think that we one of the things that was great about A Strange Loop is that it introduced Broadway to a very different sort of assortment of humans than typically are in a Broadway show. And many of us have had careers and have been doing things. I've been in the city, you know, a little over 20 years at this point. So like have been doing a lot, but like this show was the first time that people were able to fully see me. And part of it is because I also sort of came to my own, you know, self through the process of developing on this show in so many ways. And so being in A Strange Loop helped to introduce audiences to what it looks like in particular in that show to have a show centered on a larger bodied queer man who was Black, a fat Black man who is like going through the things that he goes through. There's no show that centers on that particular archetype. Then those of us who are playing the rest of the characters around him, we're just sort of a hodgepodge of different characters who were playing with material that, like, we might never get to do otherwise. You know, I started a Strange Loop in, like, 2015, I think it was. I got it from a DM in my Facebook from Michael, asking if I wanted to do a reading of this project that he was working on. He just wanted me to be me. And so, you know, we got in the room and started playing with these different characters in the play. And he was someone who was excited about letting us sort of fly and find our version of who these people were. So that's when I was first definitely introduced to the Sympathetic Ear character, who does not have a clear name. She just sort of was left with Sympathetic Ear or Patron. And I think that, like, she is the reason I sort of stuck it out with the show a bit, because when I first started the process, I was able to hide inside of her in a lot of ways. There was an element of what she brought to the story that I was like, I'll never get to do this in a show. So I'm going to hold on to this little bit of a thing here, and I'm going to ride this thing as long as I can.
Yeah.
And then post-transition, it started to become very, the interesting situation was I was holding on to her because I had to hide, but post-transition, it became, I get to do this now. And like, and now I'm getting to do this in other shows and other projects and other things. And so she felt like a really like beautiful entryway into what lies ahead.
Ah, well, dare I say, Elle Morgan Lee, coming out of your cancer shell into this beautiful, beautiful portrayal in A Strange Loop. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I could talk to you for days. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Blackest Question. Okay, we are back with The Blackest Question. I'm talking to Elle Morgan Lee, Tony-nominated actress, I might add. We've got our last question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This weekly Black newspaper is the oldest in New York City and one of the most influential and oldest continuously published African-American newspapers in the country. It was also one of the first publications to publish the writings from Malcolm X. What newspaper is it?
I don't know. I want it. I don't know that I've seen it. I don't know.
Well, I'll make sure you get a copy because it's the Amsterdam News, and I write a weekly column for them. And they still, it's a weekly publication. It comes out every Thursday. You can also get it online. But the Amsterdam News began in 1909, and founder James Henry Anderson founded the paper with just $10. Copies were then sold for just 2 cents per issue, a little bit more than that now. And the old brownstone on 7th Avenue in Harlem, where the paper was originally published, was designated as a National Historic Landmark in 1976. So I can make sure you get a copy of the Amsterdam News. It's still a print copy every Thursday. Where do you get, you've mentioned sort of social media quite a bit. Is that where you primarily get your news, and so you stay abreast of what's going on in not just New York City, but kind of Black America writ large?
Yeah. It's typically through social media. It's like, I mean, it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's the things that
the
pop out. Yeah, exactly. I'll see what pops up and what people are talking about and what people are sort of going in on. And then sometimes I'll go through a rabbit hole and then find out lots of other things that I did not realize were going on. There's that world where it's like, I'll be like, Elle Morgan, girl, pay attention. You need to open your eyes to what's happening around you.
Look around.
But then I'm like, girl, I'm just trying to survive here. I'm trying to live my life. So like, it's that interesting sort of back and forth of you need to be aware of what's happening because you can then find ways to either be helpful or just know. And the other side of it is life is stressful, and like sort of trying to get through every day can be tricky. In particular, I'm someone who takes on a lot of things. You know, I have an ongoing to-do list that almost never gets finished because I overload it constantly. And so I think that like in an effort, one of my things I am working on is trying to be better at self-care and like allowing myself space and time to like finish things. Because when you're constantly sort of chasing after and never finishing, it's hard to keep up with anything going on around you because you're always in this sort of spiral of craziness. And so I have too many
things. I feel like you're preaching to my soul. Thank you.
It's because it's very easy to jump in and like want to start or want to help or want to learn or want to build or want to read. It's like, there's so many options of things to do that I don't necessarily know how to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Now I'm going to leave that for another time. I don't do that well. I just start. And then I'm like, well, and now that's on the pot.
Right. Right. I'm trying to get better at realizing two things. No is a verb and no is a full sentence. A no is enough, right? And so, and just because I say no doesn't mean an opportunity is never going to circle back. But, you know, I think I have a tendency sometimes to juggle a lot of things. And I'm really good at juggling. But I will say, if one ball drops, they all fall. I'm not good at sort of dropping just one.
It's interesting because my to-dos are self-imposed. I read, Shonda Rhimes has a book called The Year of Yes, which I used to sort of sit back and sort of be afraid of everything. And I read that book and started to just allow myself to do things. No, thank God, has become something that I've definitely grown able to do to other people. It's the to myself that I have issues. I'll have an idea, I'll have a spark, and I'll go, oh, I'm adding it to my like drafts in my Gmail. Yes. It's like, I have so many drafts in my Gmail now that like I need to like start saying no to myself a little bit.
Right. No is a verb to myself.
To myself. Right?
That's the new t-shirt. Absolutely. But, you know, I think, you know, for someone like you and for a lot of our listeners out there, you know, when you also start tapping into your talents and you get more comfortable in who you are and your full self, then it is a great way to say, yes, I can do that, actually. You know, this is something that's going to bring me joy or enlightenment or some sort of professional momentum. So why not say yes? But then you realize it's like, ooh, I said a lot of yeses. I might need to start reel it in. I might want to say no to myself once or twice.
Yeah. It's the in particular, it's the trying to make more space for Black women. So like one of those things is like, because I said to you earlier that like I want to be on film and TV. It's like I see the things that we are presented with. I see the shows. There are some great ones out there. But then I also see some stories that are like not really being told. And so I believe that if you are the one that sees where there is a void, perhaps that is the universe also letting you know that you might need to be a part of filling what that void is. If you see where that story needs to happen, if it's in your skill set, if you've been gifted with certain things, then you maybe need to be a part of like helping that void get filled. And so that's something that I'm sort of working on. It's like I want a development deal. I want to be able to like work through some projects so that I can bring more of us in, more of us on projects, because the spaces that I'm in where they are dominated, particularly by Black women, whenever I get opportunities to be in those spaces, they just tend to be really beautiful. And like they tend to, there's an understanding that people have that you don't deal with or that you don't encounter as much in other spaces. And after coming out of a strange loop, which was so dominated by like male energy, it was time to breathe. And I'm glad that we had a wonderful end, and I'm free of that space. And now I'm able to start looking forward to like, again, what comes next?
Just new things. Well, we're manifesting with L. Morgan Lee at Blackest Questions. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I can't wait to see what you do next. I'm so excited. Like, just know that you've got like a mega fan in Brooklyn, and all of our listeners of the Blackest Questions, we are so excited to see what comes next. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I'm with Tony-nominated actress L. Morgan Lee. We have made it. We made it through the five questions. We're going to play a little bit of the Black Lightning Round. This is just fun for you, L. Morgan. I'm going to ask you some quick questions. First thing that comes to your mind, you just let me know. Okay, you ready?
Got it.
What's your favorite thing about New York City?
The food. So many different kinds of food.
What's more fun for you, getting all dolled up or lounging in comfy clothes with no makeup on?
Lounging in comfy clothes with no makeup on.
Yes. What's something people would be surprised to know about you?
Such cancers. something that people will be surprised to know about me. Maybe that I am an introvert because, you know, people see the sort of outer shell of things, that people see what you allow them to see. The center of me is, again, sitting on my couch wearing no makeup and pajamas, watching old movies. Yes.
Which would you rather, do the cooking or do the cleanup?
The cooking.
Okay. Which Broadway classic could you watch over and over again?
Oh, God, there's some. First one comes to mind. I'm going to say, so random, Hello, Dolly with Barbara Streisand.
Okay. I'm a big Rodgers and Hammerstein girl.
The carousel.
And the last question, what's your favorite trash TV to binge?
This is my love language, actually, because I watch lots of them. Currently the Real Housewives franchises are the trash TV to binge. I mean, I think that's the dominant one. And I can't say a single one because I watch many of them. I mean, Potomac has been the focal point at the moment.
Okay.
Potomac and Atlanta in particular are my two faves.
Okay, so you were definitely walking around the house with your martini glass, yelling at everyone, and I love it. Listen, for our listeners out there, you've been listening to and laughing with Elle Morgan Lee, Tony Award-nominated actress, and you've been listening to The Blackest Questions. I want to thank you all for listening. This show is produced by Sasha Armstrong and Jeffrey Trudeau, and Regina Griffin is our director of podcasts. If you like what you heard, subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And you can find more from the Griot Black Podcast Network on the Griot app, website, and YouTube. Thanks for tuning in.
You are now listening to the Griot's Black Podcast Network, Black culture amplified. Coming this February, the Griot Black Podcast Network presents Dear Culture, Truish Black Stories.
When you think of sheer artistry, sheer creativity, the ability for someone to bring Black people together in the most fundamental ways, it's, you know, I would say of my four, Randy Watson's my number one.
When the news about Ricky first broke, what I heard about it is the thing you hear about, you know, every time somebody Black dies, that it was gang related. That means the police don't know what happened, so they just said probably the gangs, probably, you know, the other Black dudes.
When I think of Akilah, you know, I just think about how impressionable white people can be. I think about how, you know, if you watch that movie again, you know, if you should have lost like three times.
Where were you when you heard the story about them suckers getting served by Wade's dance crew?
You know, it's crazy that you mentioned this. So as a New Yorker, right, everyone knows where they were on 9/11, right? You know, a couple years later, right, 2003, everyone hears about this crazy moment in a boxing ring, because that's where dancers duke it out, right? In boxing rings.
If you could say something to Ricky right now, what would you say to him?
Ricky, you shouldn't have never got that girl pregnant. You knew I had a crush on you. You should have got with me instead.
Moments in Black culture examined like never before. Join us each week as we dive into the Black moments that changed us, that changed the world. Make sure to subscribe to Dear Culture so you never miss an episode.